Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Bava Basra, daf Kuf Samach Zayin. We are holding on daf Kuf Samach Vav Amid Beis, five lines from the bottom of the page. Ahu Dava Kosov Beis Shus Mea Zuzi. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Lila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha La Shalom, as well as by Daniel Sadian, for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and our captives. They shall all return home safely, as well as by Sruli and Esti Rose, Lezecha Nishmas Sruli's father, Rav Rafal Aaron Ben Binyamin, HaKohen, is Nisham Shem Naliyah, and also in honor of Rafi's Hanachas Tefillin, Mazel Tov, and that's this morning. And it's also sponsored by the Rossmans in honor of the engagement of their daughter Ayala to Tate and Auerbach of West Hempstead. Mazel tov to the entire Rossman and Auerbach family. And we thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today, first the Gemara is going to talk about a case when the denomination of money is unclear in the shtar. It says like 500 something, but we don't know if it's pennies, nickels, dollars, whatever. So how do we figure that out? Or what do we do with such a shtar? Then the Gemara is going to discuss advice on how to keep your signature on record for future kiyum shtaro. So you want to give a sample of your signature, so we can give some advice how to make sure that that sample doesn't itself become a source of ziyuf. Then the Gemara is going to give advice on avoiding tampering with money amounts in the shtar, that you're going to write a check and someone's going to be able to tamper with the numbers that you put in the check. How do you avoid that? Then the Gemara is going to give us three different stories where they caught various forgeries. They noticed something was off in the way the shtar was written, and they beat the guy up until he admitted what he had done. And the Mishnah on the bottom of Amud Aleph, going over to Amud Beis, is going to talk about writing shtaros without both parties present. Which kinds of shtaros can you write without both parties to the shtar being present, as well as who pays the scribe when it comes to writing various kinds of shtaros? So the Gemara then is going to discuss, when you're writing get, when do you have to be concerned that it's going to end up in the wrong hands, and how do you avoid it ending up in the wrong hands with somebody else of the same name, or another couple where they both have the same name, and that it shouldn't be used in an inappropriate way. So let's begin again, five lines from the end of the page on Daf Kuf Samach Vav Amud Beis. Ha'udav Akasav Bey Shis Mea Vizuza. There was a shtar that it said in the shtar 600, but it doesn't say 600 of what, plus a zuz. So they didn't know 600 of what. So Shalcha Rav Shavya Kameda Abayi. Rav Shavya sent the shayla to Abayi, and he said, what does the Shismeya mean? Shismeya Istri Vizuza? Does it mean 600 Slaim? Now each sela happens to be worth 25 zuz. A sela is a big currency. So it means 600 Slaim plus a zuz? Oh, Dilma Shismeya Priti Vizuza. Or maybe it means 600 Prutos. So Prutos are tiny matpeya. It's a matpeya that has very little value. So maybe it means 600 prutos plus another zuz. Now the point is not that those are the only two possibilities. There are a bunch of currencies in between, but we're saying it could go from one extreme to the other. He might mean 600 of the least valuable currency versus 600 of the most valuable. Samerlei, so he said, well, first off, dal priti. Certainly it doesn't mean prutos. The kasvi b'shtara, because they would never write 600 prutos in shtar. Rather what they would do is dasuke maskanahu. They would combine the prutos together, umashvilu zuzi, and describe it in terms of zuzim, meaning every 192 prutos is a zuz. So they wouldn't write 600 prutos, they would write 3 zuz and 24 prutos, right? Just like you wouldn't write 324 pennies. No, you would write $3 and 24 cents. You wouldn't write 324 pennies. So there's no way 600 means 600 prutos. That's off the table. So my Amrit, what do you want to say? Shismeya Istri Vizuza? You want to go to the other extreme and say he means 600 Slaim plus Azuz? So Yad Bala Shara Tachton, that we cannot possibly say because Amotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya. So you can't collect the highest denomination of any currency. So what do you get? You get 600 zuz and another zuz. You have to assume that the whole thing is written in zuzim and not in slaim, and certainly not in prutos either. Now Tosos raises the question in Dibra Maskul Mashvi, well, wait a second, if it's all in zuzim, why wouldn't they put the zuzim together? Meaning you wouldn't say 42 nickels, right? You would say $2, 20 nickels makes sense, $2 and 10 cents, right? You wouldn't say 42 nickels. So shouldn't you say, even though a nickel is not the smallest currency, the penny is the smallest one, but why is it when it came to prutos, we said, oh, there's no way they would have said 600 prutos, right? We should say the same thing by zuzim, that they would have put it in terms of larger denominations. So Tosos writes that the derech is to write zuzim in a shtar, even though there is a larger denomination. It's only by prutos where it's not the derech to write it in a shtar. Meaning you don't write $20 bills, you write $100. And that's okay, even though you're not giving 100 of the dollars, you don't write it that way in the shtar. That was the derech, that they would write zuzim. They would just happen to never write prutos in the shtar. So now the Gemara tells Zomar Abai, Hayman debay lemachvi chasimus yadei bebeidina. If a guy wants to keep his signature on record in Beis Din, so that in the future, whenever Beis Din needs to be mekayim the chasimus eidim, they'll be able to compare this chasima that they have on record with the chasima, or they'll see his chasima. They'll be able to compare that which they have seen with the chasima of that shows up on a shtar. So you just want to sign a blank piece of paper and say, this is what my signature looks like. So lo lachvi b'sof megilta. Bad idea to sign on the end of a blank sheet of paper, because dilma mashkecha, because maybe someone will mashkecha acher, a person who's up to no good, is going to find that blank sheet of paper, v'kasav demasik pezuze, and he's going to write that this fellow, that is going to write, I hereby owe this person $1 million, and it's going to have the signature of this fellow on the bottom of the piece of paper. So you don't give someone a blank signed check. That's essentially what you're doing when you give a person a blank sheet of paper with your name signed on the bottom. The utnan and that would be enough to be mechayev the person, even though there are no edim signed on the shtar, because the Mishnah is going to say at the very end of the Masechta, we're already close to the very end of the Masechta, but even at the very, very end of the Masechta, that Otziel of Ksav Yado, Shu Chayev Lo, Govmin Chasmin Echarin, that if someone is able to produce a note that's an IOU with only his signature on it, so then they're able to collect from the Chasmin Echarin. It doesn't have a din of a shtar that you're able to collect from the Chasmin Shubadim, but you're still going to be able to collect using that signature from the Chasim B'nei Chorin. So it is a terrible idea to give a person, to have a paper out there that is blank on the top and has your signature on the bottom. So the Eitza is to put your signature on the top of a paper so no one can do anything with that paper. Now it happens to be the Gemara in the second paragraph of Ksubas also talks about how to submit a signature without risking anything, and the Gemara says to write on a piece of cheres, because cheres is something that that's very easy to be mezayef, and therefore would never be accepted as an IOU. It would be rejected as a shtar, as an IOU, and so no one would ever be able to use it because it's so easy to be mezayef cheres. So Tosus over there, Maseches Ksubas, points out, why is it that our Gemara has one etza of writing on your signature on the top of a piece paper, and then Gemara Ksubas has another etzah of writing on a piece of cheres. So Tosa says both etzahs are good. Either one works. These are just two different suggestions of how to make sure your signature doesn't get out there in a way that's going to become damaging to you. The Ramban, however, writes that over here we're talking about that a person signs on his own, and in such a case he could write at the beginning of a klaf. But the Gemara over there is talking about where Beis Din tells a guy to sign in order to be mekayim shtar that already has his signature. So Beis Din has to be choshesh that if we tell him to sign on a blank sheet of paper, even if we instruct him and sign at the top, he might accidentally sign at the bottom. So when Beis Din is telling you to sign, they're going to tell you to sign on a piece of cheres. But when you're signing on your own and you want to be careful, so it's good enough to just sign on the top of the piece of paper. Now, what's difficult over here is that the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malva V'Loveh, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Gimel, Another Rishonim said as well that a lova is neman to say parati against a shtar that only has chasimas yado, against a shtar that doesn't have edim. So what are we worried about over here? This fellow signed on the bottom of the piece of paper, so we're worried someone's going to write, and I hereby owe $1 million on the top of the piece of paper, and then they'll be able to take out this shtar and say, look, it's an IOU that you wrote. Well, according to the Rambam, he could say parati, and he'd be believed. So that's it. If all you have is chasimas yadi, you don't have shnei edim on a shtar, I'm neman to say parati. So what damage could possibly be done? The guy could just say parati. So the Ritva says that since it's a shtar mezuyef, you have to be worried that he might tell the truth, meaning he might not say parati. He might say lo lavisi, right? He might say, I never borrowed any money. I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't know what this whole thing is. I don't know where you got this from. He's not going to say parati if he doesn't ever remember borrowing $1 million. So, and once he says lo lavisi, kalomer lo lavisi, kalomer lo parati, tani. If he says lo lavisi, he's not going to be believed to say lo lavisi, but that's going to be the truth. And once he says lo lavisi, that's as if he said lo parati. If he said lo parati, then it will be able to be used against him. Alternatively, the Ritva suggests that the Mezayiv could write in the shtar a ne'amanus as well, that he's going to write that the lova should not be ne'aman to say parati. And even in the Rambam would be more than that case, meaning if you write an IOU where you say, I owe you $1 million and I hereby forego my rights to any claim of parati, so then you forego your rights to any claim of parati. So a clever Mezayiv could use that blank piece of paper to write all of that, to write that he's foregoing his claim of parati. So those are two answers as to why it is that this shtar could be used against him and he can't just say parati. Okay, so the Gemara brings a maaser related to this. Hahu Bazvina. There was a certain tax collector, a Jewish tax collector. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, that's a funny word, Bazvina. So is it Bizvina in selling? Is it Zvina? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, no, the Bez is actually part of the shorish of the word. He says it probably comes from being mevazvez or bizbuz, to spend money. So the reason tax collector is called the bazvina is because he spends money on purchasing the right to collect taxes. Meaning the king doesn't want to deal with the nitty gritty of tax collecting, so someone would pay for the contract. It was a government contract, so you pay for the right to be able to be the one to collect for yourself. So bazvina, there was a guy that was a tax collector. Came to Abayi, Amalei. So the tax collector said, show me your signature on a shtar, so that when the chacham come to try to avoid the paying taxes, I'll be able to recognize your chasima if you write a note for them asking that I forgive them of their tax obligation. Meaning, you and I have a good relationship. I trust you, Abaye, as the leader of the Jewish people. You know who can afford and who can't afford, and sometimes you can write a note for somebody to ask for me to give him a tax break. So I want to know that the note is not forged. So I need to know your signature. So do me a favor, write your signature for me on a piece of paper, and that way I'll always be able to recognize it. So mavarnelu below michsa, and I'll let them go without paying the mechas. I'll let them, meaning it was a toll collector on a bridge or something. So I'll let them go without paying the toll. So achvile sabai wanted to show his chasima bereish megilta. He wanted to sign on the top of a blank piece of paper because he wanted to follow the advice of his own advice, right? Abaye was the one that said, "Hai man debay lemech v'chasim yisadim beidina," that he should only do it on the top of the piece of paper. He didn't want to give the guy a blank sheet of paper with his signature on the bottom. So when Abaye was about to sign on the top, the toll collector moved the sheet of paper, very subtly, hoping Abaye wouldn't notice and that he wasn't being makvit to dafka sign there, and hoping he'd get him lower down on the piece of paper so that he'll then be able to forge it later. So Amalei, so Abaye says, Kvar kadmuch Rabbanan. The Rabbanan already outsmarted you because they already thought of all of these cases. So, the Chacham already realized that this would lead to Ziyuf, so that's why I'm on to what you're doing, meaning a more innocent, unassuming person might have not realized what you were trying to do over here and would have fallen into your trap. It's interesting, Kvar kadmuch Rabbanan, it was him. He was meaning he was the one that thought of it. It was Abaye that that thought of this idea, that had this teaching. But perhaps he's saying, these are the kinds of things the Rabbanan were working on. They were always working on all the dinim and the shtaros, so they thought of every possible ziyuf and of every possible way. Normally, you have to be a forger in order to recognize a forgery. But if you're always working on how to secure the integrity of the shtaros, so you're also going to think like a forger. You're also going to come up with these ideas. So the Rabbanan, in the way that we think about things and the way that we work on these things, we've already addressed this problem. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Mitlas Yad Eser, whenever you're writing the number on a shtar of how much someone owes, so between the number 3 and the number 10, Lo Lichtu B'Sof Shita, it's a bad idea to write that number at the end of the line, because you could always Dilma Mizayif HaKasav. It's very easy to add just a single letter, and it's gonna change the number drastically, and no one would notice. You could add a yud or a mem in the extra space right after the word, and shalosh will become shloshim, arba will become arbaim, and until eser. But once you write a chadasar, so then you don't have to be choshesh for anything, because what's the guy going to do? He's going to turn it to achad v'esrim. In addition to the yud mem, he's going to need at the end of the eser, he's also going to need a vav in between the achad and the eser. And there was no room for the vav. So once you're squeezing things in, and it looks like something was squeezed, everyone's going to realize that something is up. So it is a less forgeable kind of thing if it requires squeezing in. So Abaye says, Vi Yisramile, and if you have to write at the end of a line because you're writing a shtar and you didn't plan it out well, and you end up having to put the number at the end of the line, so here's the advice. Nahadri Lidburi Train Tosa Zimni. Make it a very wordy, verbose shtar where you write the number over and over again throughout the course of the shtar. Because Ef Shadulam Yisramile Be'em Tzashita. Because you write it enough times that one of the times is going to be in the middle of a line where it's not going to be easily forgeable, and therefore you'll always have that to fall back on. So you have to make sure that at least one of the times that the dollar amount is mentioned in the shtar, that it's in the middle of a line, that it's less forgeable. So now the Gemara tells three stories relating to ziyufim that were attempted. There was a shtar that said that a guy was selling a garden that he has, Tilta Bipardisa, one third of the pardis that he has inside that gina. So Azal, the lokeach, went after he got the shtar, Machke Legage de Beis, he removed the top of the letter Beis, Vikare, and the bottom of the letter Beis. And therefore, all that was left from the Beis was a Vav. Meaning, if you remove the majority of the top of the Beis and the entirety of the bottom of the Beis, so then it just looks like a letter Vav. Vishavi, so instead of it being Tilta Bipardesa, he turned it to Tilta Upardesa. So the Mashmaos is that he's selling him one third of his garden, and in addition to one third of his garden, his entire pardes. So also the shtar came to Abaye. Amalei Abaye said to the Lukech, Maitem Revich Leal Malai Vav. Why did you leave so much space for a vav? You know that a vav is a narrow letter. A beis is a very wide letter. So once he was able to scrape off the top and the bottom of the beis, was left with a very narrow vav and some extra space. So he said, something's off over here. So kafte, he tied him to a post, to a pillar, and beat him up va'odi until the guy admitted that he was mezayif the shtar. The Rama writes that Abaye was allowed to hit him in order to be motzias hadin la'amito, and that people shouldn't come to do this. Dayan is allowed to do this whenever he sees a chashash ziyuf, to make sure to uphold the integrity of shtaros in general. So even though he didn't do something for which one is chayiv malchus, but he's allowed to, this is something that Dayanim are allowed to do in order to make sure that the dinim amanus are upheld properly. The Me'iri quotes a Yesh Misha Omer that Abaye did not have the right to beat him up misafek. He only tied him to the post as if he was going to beat him up. It was just a scare tactic, but he didn't actually start whipping him. They said, okay, let's get the whips out, and the guy got scared immediately. He said, no, we don't, no need for that. I forged so it never came to that. It was a scare tactic. The Ritva points out over here that you see from here that had the guy not been Moda, the shtar would have been kosher, even though there was this a lot of extra space next to the letter Vav. And even though there was no kiyum on those letters, it didn't say at the end of the shtar, you may notice a weird Vav, but we just wrote it in that way, signed to Edom, right? There was no extra kiyum at the end of the shtar explaining away why you have this anomaly in the shtar. So the Ritva says it must be that when he erased the top and the bottom of the bays, he did it in such a way where it was not nicker that there was a chasima there, that there was a mechika there. Because the Yerushalmi says that whenever there's a mechika, we always have to assume that, we always have to figure out what else it could have said, and be choshish that it might have said that. So if you had a vav with mechikos, you would have had to assume that it might have been a vav, and therefore that's going to radically change the meaning of the shtar. So it must be that they did it in a way where it was not recognizable that there was a mechika, and therefore this shtar would have been a valid shtar if not for the guy admitting. However, the Rashba writes, from the fact that Abaye doesn't passel the entire shtar because of the mechika of the beis, you see that a mechika does not passel an entire shtar. You just don't learn from that makom that the mechika exists. But we're not choshish that there was a tanai that was written over that mechika that's going to be mevatel the koach hashtar. Okay, so that was story number one. Story number two, there was a shtar that was written that a guy bought Menas Reuven v'Shimon Achai, the chelek in the karka that's owned by the brothers Reuven and Shimon. Havalu Acha d'Shmei Achai. Now it happened to be Reuven and Shimon had a third brother named Achai, but it just says Reuven v'Shimon Achai, so Azal Kasabe Vav. So he added in a Vav before the word Achai. So it sounds like he's buying all of the properties that belong to Reuven Shimon v'Achai. Now he's getting an extra person's property. So v'Shavye v'Achai. He turned it into ve'achai. So as the kaveh d'abaye, the dintor came to Abaye. Amalei, so Abaye said to Lekech, my time doch le'an l'ay vav kulehai. How come the vav is so squeezed in there? It looks like that vav wasn't natural to the writing of the shtar before the word achai. So kafte va'ode, he beat him up until he, or tied him to the post, and threatened to beat him up according to that daya, and he was moda that he was mezayif the shtar. Okay, third story, who started? There was a star that was signed in it, Rava. That Rava was one of the Aden. So Ravacha Barada. And the other Aden was Ravacha Barada. It looked like on the star. Those were the two signatures at the bottom of the star. Also, Kameh Rava. So, but it was a shtar mezuyah. They had forged the names. The guy was just really good at forging the names. So he came to Rava and said, and they said, "Do you recognize this signature?" So Rava said, "Tein chasimus yada didihi. That is absolutely my signature. Miu Kameh Ravach Barad lo chasimili meolam." But one thing I can tell you is that I did not sign that shtar because I never would have signed a shtar and put my name before Ravach Barada. I'm always to give proper cover, Ravach Barada would always sign before me. There's no way I would have ever signed before him. So Kafti Va'ode, Rava beat the guy up, and the guy was Moda, that he was Mezayif, the Chasimus of both Rava and Ravach Barada. There is a Machlokas Rishonim when it comes to Kiyum Shtaros, when the Kiyum is done by the Edei Ashtar themselves being Makir, their Chasimus Yedehem. When they say, yeah, that is in fact my signature, as opposed to the other way to be Kayim Mishtar is by having two other people, two other Aden, who are Makir, the Chasimus Yad of each of the people. But what if I say, yeah, I recognize that signature, I have no recollection of this Maisa, I don't recall, did this happen, did this not happen, no recollection whatsoever. Meaning, when you're Mekayim Mishtar that has my signature on it, by me recognizing my signature, do I have to not only recognize my signature, but also confirm that that the content of the shtar is accurate, reconfirm that? Or, no, I just have to recognize my signature and I have no recollection of the content of the shtar. So the Rambam Shita in Parachas of Hilchos Eidos is that it is not a kiyum unless you also remember the maisa that happened. Whereas the Ravid says that since they're meyed, that this is their chasima, that's enough to be mekayim the shtar. You don't have to remember the maisa. That's what the shtar is for. The shtar tells you the maisa that happened, as long as you recognize your chasima. So the Ritva says, our Gemara is a kash on the Rambam, because Rava had to beat the guy up until he admitted that he was Mezayef. Sounds like without that, the shtar would have been Mekuyam, even though Rava is saying, I don't remember this ever happening, meaning, and not only does he not remember it happening, there was a reus over here that caused him to think that something that probably didn't happen. But apparently saying I don't remember that this ever happened was not enough to ruin the shtar. So it's against the Rambam. So the Beis Yosef writes that Rav was choshesh that the other one is going to be mekayim his chasima by going to somebody else. Meaning the Beis Yosef says, no, in a chinami, it would be enough to undo a kiyum or to prevent a kiyum by saying, yeah, that's my signature, but I do not remember writing the shtar. So what's the guy going to do? He says, oh yeah, it's your signature. So he's going to take the shtar, he's going to go to two other edim who recognize Rav's signature. They don't have to remember what it says in the shtar. They're going to verify that Taka is Rava's signature, and then it's going to be Mekuyim that way. That's why Rava felt that he needed to beat him up to get the guy to be Moda, so that they could tear up the shtar. Or he says he didn't tie him up in order to puzzle the shtar. He just wanted to know how you did it, meaning the shtar was puzzle anyway, but he wanted to know, he wanted the guy to admit, how did you manage to you know, what kind of AI did you use to get my exact signature? How did you manage to do this? And the Tumim, he says that really the Maisalva actually happened, and Rava remembered the Maisalva, but the guy was Mezayef the Shtar because he wanted to not only collect money, he wanted to collect from the Chasam Meshubadim, and that's what was going on over here. But the Maisalva did in fact happen, so the whole case doesn't relate to this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. But anyway, so Rava was able to get the guy to admit that he was Mezayef. So Rava said to the forger, Bishlam Didizi Afta, I get how you were able to forge my signature. Mine is an easy one. All my kids forged it in school or whatever, right? I get how you managed to do that. That's not a hard one. El Dravach Barada, Duratis Yade, Dravach Barada has a very hard signature. He has a shaky hand. So he has, whatever he had, whether he had Parkinson's or something, his hand was shaking. So it's very hard to forge a signature like that. Hechi Avadit, how did you do that? So Amar Anchi Yadaya Mitzra, so he said, I put my hand on the rope that's attached to the bridge that goes over the river, you know, when you're on one of those plank bridges and the whole thing is shaking. So I put my hand on the rope as people were walking across it, so my hand was shaking as I was signing it, and that's how I was able to do it. V'amila kam azarnuka v'kasav. And some say that he stood on the kli that they used to draw water from the bar, which is not so even and it shakes a lot. So I was standing on a shaky chair, so I was shaking the whole time as I was signing it, so he knew the tricks of the trade of how to produce a signature that looked like it was written by a shaky hand. Okay, so now new Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to discuss, when do we write a shtar without the presence of both parties to the shtar? So kosvin get le'ish afal pi shein ishto imo. We can write a get for the husband, and Adam can sign on it and give it to the husband, even though the wife is not there, because a man is able to be Megarish's wife, Bal Karcha. Again, it's not right to be Megarish's wife, Bal Karcha. That's why Rabbeinu Gershom made a cherem against doing so. But the get would be effective if you were Megarish's wife, Bal Karcha. And therefore, since you don't need the Dasa Isha for a get, so you can write the get and give it to the husband, and he'll use it whenever he wants it. Whenever he wants to use it, he'll give it to his wife whenever he's interested in getting divorced. Now, Tosus and the Ramban raised the question that there's a major chashash kanunya over here, that this get might be a monetary scam that the husband and wife are trying to pull off, because the Baal and the Isha are going to take money shalokadin, because the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan and Gittin Daf Yud Zayin is that a Baal can eat peros of the nechasim of his wife even after he wrote a get for her, up until the time that he actually gives her the get and is megarish her. So the chashash is that he's going to write a get right now without the wife here. He's not going to be megarish her. In between, he's going to sell the peros of his wife's nechasim to other people, which he's still allowed to do because they're still married. They still belong, the peros still belong to him. And we have to be choshish that after he gives her the get, the woman's going to claim that she received the get on the date that's written on the get. And memela, the mechira of the peros that the husband had done throughout that entire period between the date written on the get and when she actually received the get was shalokadin. She's going to claim that up until that any mechira that was done after the date written on the get is shalokadin, even though it wasn't really shalokadin because they hadn't gotten divorced with this get, and the woman is going to take the perus from the lukuchos with such a taina shalokadin, because really she only received the get months later. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Yutes asks a similar question about a get that was lost, a get isha that was nafal, that you found, that you have to be choshesh that maybe it wasn't given to the wife on the very day that that the get was dated. And the Gemara says that the lukuchos are not going to give the perus until you bring a raya that she got divorced on that day. But that only works over there where there's a raya on the get because of the nefila. But a regular get that the woman has, the lukuchos are not able to make a taina that we don't think it was delivered on that day. So ask Sosos, this is ripe for a problem. You're going to give a husband a get with a date on it, the wife's not here, you don't see the mesiris haget happening today. Mesiris haget could happen in a month from now, 2 months from now, and all the mechira that he does of her nechasim in between is going to be shalokadin. They're going to be able to be tofei shalokadin from the lukuchos. So Tosa suggests that people generally do not write a date on a get until they're absolutely ready to get divorced, because lo makdiminish paranusa lenafshe, that it's not a pleasant thing to get divorced. So it's something that that is a paranus in life. So people in general are not going to make it happen earlier than it has to happen. Nuka Yosef quotes in the Ra'ah that you don't have to be choshesh for the kanunya over here for such a trick, because any woman who's motzi again and wants to be motzi peros from lukuchos is going to have to bring a raya when she received the get from the husband. Meaning, in a chinami, the Chazal were very well aware that someone could do this, and therefore, whenever a woman collects from lukuchos of peros, she has to actually prove when she received the get, and the date on the get is not sufficient proof. Hashover the isha afli she'in bailima. The Mishnah continues. You write a shover that the woman writes that she had received her ksuba payment. You could write that for the isha, even though the husband is not with her, and she's got to be careful that the husband doesn't get that that shover until he actually pays the ksuba. But the sofer and the edim need to recognize the names of the husband and the wife that they're writing the get and the shofar for, because otherwise you have to be choshesh that the baal is going to write the get for a different woman and give it to her, or the isha is going to write the shofar for a different husband and give it to him. And who pays for the get? So the baal is the one that has to pay for the sofer to write the get, and the Gemara is going to explain that in tomorrow's daf, and the he also has to pay for the ksiva of the shover, because that's what gets him out of having to pay the ksuba again. So so that's to his benefit. Then the Mishnah says, kosvin shtar lalove afal pishein malve imo, that a shtar halva'o we're able to write for a borrower even though the lender is not there, because the lender is not going to lose from having a shtar that says that he's owed money. So you can write a shtar for a lova. Lova is interested in borrowing money from somebody. He wants to have a shtar in hand ready to go, so that as soon as the loan is made, he'll be able to produce a shtar. He'll be able to provide the fellow with a shtar. So you're allowed to write one for him. But obviously, you can't write a shtar for a lender unless the borrower is there. You can't just be writing shtaros for people saying that they had loaned millions of dollars if they hadn't, if you don't know that they had, and then they're going to have a shtar in hand that says that they did. The lova is the one that pays for the sofer to write the shtar, because he's the one that's getting hanah from the halva. He's the one that's getting the money. If someone is selling karka to somebody else, you can write a shtar for the mocher, even though the lokeach is not there with him, because there's no loss to the lokeach. He's the one that's getting the karka. But you cannot write a shtar for the lokeach unless the mocher is there, because the lokeach will have a shtar mekach, without ever having purchased anything, and he'll be able to claim he's the owner of the property. And the lokeach is the one that has to pay for the sofer. You don't write a shtar erusin when they would describe what exactly the father of the chasen and the father of the kala have to give to each the chasen and the kala, what their commitments are, and the shtar nisuin just means a ksuba, unless both the avia by shtar erusin, unless both fathers are there. That's what we call the tanoim, is the shtar erusin, unless both, which nowadays doesn't really include much, doesn't really say anything. interesting, but it used to be very specific and very detailed about what the obligations are from each side. So those are, but since they're both being mischayev mamon in that shtar, it works to make demands of both parties. So both parties need to be there. You can't write for one party without the other. And the same with the ksuba, it makes demands of both the chasan and the kala, and therefore you need both of them there. And the chasan pays for the writing of these shtaros, because he's the one that's gaining the nadunya and he's gaining a wife. Ein kosin shtar arisus v'kablanos elamidas shnehem. You don't write a shtar where an arus is going to obligate himself to work in the field of a balabayis, and the balabayis is going to give a certain amount of the grain that comes from that field, or a kablanos where the balabayis is going to give him a certain set amount of money without any connection to how much grain it produces, unless both parties are there, because there's a hischaivus from both sides. V'amekabel nosin sachar, but the arus or the kablan, he's the one that has to pay for the shtar. Ein kosin shtari birurin v'kol ma'isa beizdin elamidash neim. We don't write shtari birurin. The Gemara will explain what that is exactly, or any other ma'isa beizdin, unless they both they're both there. Shneim nosin sachar, and they both have to pay for the sofer. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer l'shneim kosin shneim lazel la'atzmo lazel li'atzmo. That he disagrees. He says you could to the two balei din, you could write two different shtaros. You write one for each party. All of this is going to be explained in the Gemara. So now, says the Gemara, we said in the first case of the Mishnah that you don't write a get for a man unless that you do write a get for a man if even when his wife is not there, and you write a shofar for an isha even though the isha is not there. But as long as you recognize them, who do you need to recognize? Who do the edim need to recognize in order to write such a shtar? Some ravidim rav ulbvachei makir shema ish beget, that the sofer and the edim have to know who the man is in the writing of the get, because otherwise you have to be choshish that the guy that's standing in front of you is writing a get in the name of some other man, and then he's going to give the get to the wife of that other man, and she'll be able to say, you know, this guy's going to come to Beis and say, I'm Reuven and I'm divorcing my wife Rachel. He's not Reuven, but he knows Reuven, so he's going to have a get that says that he's Reuven, he's divorcing his wife Rachel, he's going to give it to Reuven's wife Rachel, and now she'll say, ah, I'm free, I have a get. So you have to know that it's in fact him. V'shem isha v'shover, and the same is true with the name of the wife on the shofar, because otherwise you have to be choshesh that this woman is not the woman who it is, and she's going to give this shofar to her friend's husband, and he's going to say, oh, I already paid my ksuba, when he in fact didn't. Yasav rav sav rav ach bar hunav rav hunav bar chinna v'yasav abayi gabayhu v'yasav yukavim bayilu. So these chachamim were sitting around, and they raised the following safek. Shema ish beget in shema ishalo, shema ish b'shover in shema ishlo. Should we be medayik that when writing the get, you only need to know who the husband is? You don't need to know who the wife is. When writing the shover, you only need to know who the wife is. You don't need to know who the husband is. V'leich hashtul makasav gita v'azal mamti leili itse dehech. But shouldn't you be choshish that maybe this guy will write a get for someone else's wife's name, and he'll give the get to Eshes Chavero, and he'll say, she'll say that she's grusha, that she's a grusha, and she'll collect her ksuba from her husband Shaloka Din. And Vizimna Nalza Kosva Isha Shovar. Sometimes a woman is going to write a shovar that has another man's name that's not her husband. And she'll give it to a man who's not her husband, and he's going to be numb and say that he paid up his wife's ksuba. So well, Rav said that Shema Ish Beget Vuadin L'Shema Isha. Shema Isha B'Shovar Vuadin L'Shema Ish. No, it's not Dafka. It's, you have to know both parties of the get and the shovar. Lech L'Shnei Yosef B'Shimon Adarim B'Yaracha Still Makasav Gita Vazal Matilei Li Itzadehech. Well, wait a second. How do you know that there aren't two couples where both husband and wife have the same name living in the same city, and now you're going to write, even though I do know the Shema Ish and I do know the Shema Isha, it still might lead to problems, because it could be that they're going to provide it to the other couple. They'll give the get to the other woman. They'll give the shofar to the other man. So Amalahu Ravacha Barhuna Hachiyam Rav Shnei Yosef and Shimon Adar Birachas Ein Megashin Nishrosein El Zeb Bifnei Zeh. When you have two Yosef and Shimons living in the same city, then they can only get divorced when all parties are there, so that we could see exactly who is getting divorced, who's receiving the get. That's how the Rambam and Tosa Rush says that all four parties are going to need to be there. The Meiri says no, it just means that you just have to see. You don't need the other couple to be there. You just need to make sure the gerushin happens right now in front of your face. They just need to see that the gerushin happens so that you don't have such problems. Maybe they'll go to another place and he'll say his name is Yosef ben Shimon, so that will be his name in that place, and he'll write a get of Yosef ben Shimon in the other city, and then he'll give it to this Yosef ben Shimon's wife. We don't have to worry. Once someone is called by a certain name for 30 days, we don't have to worry that he's Meshaker. So once we know that it's 30 days Mistaver, that it's his actual name. So ask Gemara, Lo Ischazik Mai, if it hasn't been 30 days that his name is known and he wants to be Megarish his wife, what's the din? How will we Mevarer his actual name? Amrabai Dekar Levani. You call him suddenly and you see if he responds to it. And if he responds to it, people naturally respond to their name, and if they lie about their name, they're not going to respond to it. Razvid Amar Rama Baramu Usei Zahir. Razvid said, yes, he will, meaning people who know how to lie will be good at lying. So if they claim their name is something else, when you call them that something else, they'll respond to that as well. Okay, but from tomorrow, we'll pick up five lines from the end of the page. Hahu Tavra, everyone have a wonderful day.